Welcome into the Swarmcast here on the ESPN Houston YouTube channel and ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George, Will Kunkel here with you to talk Houston Texans. Winning streak. It's happening. Also the bye week. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Star Tequila, the world's first and only night harvested tequila. You can find it near you at bluestartequila.com. All right, Will. How are we feeling?
Listen, I think you feel good.
Yes.
You go to Baltimore, you put an ass-whipping on them, you win for the first time in 8 attempts there. It's your first ever win in Baltimore as a franchise. It's kind of crazy. A quarter of a century later, we're still having firsts.
Yes.
You'd ideally not be doing that. But the offense looked good. They did what they were supposed to do against a super banged-up defense and a super banged-up offense. The defense looked really good against them. So I think that's the caveat. So what did this game mean? I think there were a lot of strides taken. I think the offense looked good. But we came into this game thinking it was a measuring stick game. Mm-hmm. How do you look against one of the best? Are you ready to play in that tier? And that's not what it was. It just wasn't that game. It was maybe a notch below the Titans game regards to like competition.
Yeah, it's how are you doing against one of the best is what it was supposed to be. Now it's how are you doing against one of the worst. So for me, like, you don't want to go over your skis and things like that and be overly excited about what you saw in this game. I think you have to be reasonable. But at the same time, this is exactly what they were supposed to do. You're playing a team that's missing their 6 highest paid players on their roster. They have no Lamar Jackson. They have no Roquan Smith. They have no Metabike. They have like nobody out there.
No Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah. So
no Kyle Hamilton.
You're supposed to dominate them in this way. This is what we would expect if the Texans had a better start to the season and the Ravens were still this beat up. This is the result we would have expected. So for that reason, I do think it's a positive. Is that when you play a team that is this poor, like you did with the Titans and the Ravens, outscoring them 70-10 mm-hmm. in 2 games, it checks the box of, well, at least that's what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, I don't think there's any negatives to take away from this game.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best thing, is that it wasn't, they were beat up, but our offensive line didn't look good. They were beat up, but our secondary got torched on a deep route. They were beat up, but C.J. Stroud threw these dumb interceptions. Like, none of that happened. There were no blown coverages on the deep side. The offensive line had a 30% allowed pressure rate, which is the second best they've had all season long. The first best was against the Titans, so it's progressively getting better. But all of this doesn't happen like in a vacuum. Not every game is treated the same. Like, if you play certain ways against bad teams and you just squeak out the win, you play that way against good teams, you're going to lose. They're not going to put up 44 points per game going forward. They're not going to shut out teams going forward like they did the Titans. So it was all good, but it doesn't happen in a vacuum. The competition has to be taken into an account, because that's all we talked about in the offseason were the tiers in the NFL. And we always said that the Texans were in that second tier. Well, the teams that they have beaten this year are literally in the bottom tier of the NFL. Historically bad team for the Ravens this year. The Titans are the only team in the NFL to not have a first quarter touchdown all year. Like, those are the teams that they have beaten. Mm-hmm. But they have done what they were supposed to do against them and have handily beaten them. Whatever happens in Seattle, that's going to be the new definition of the Texans. Whatever it might be, that's who the Texans are going to be until they change the narrative again, as the narrative always changes 4 or 5 times throughout a year.
Yeah, I do think in this game, though, I think there are positives that we can take away from this game, even though it's the Ravens. I think Nick Caley, mm-hmm. Did a much better job of they're finding the easy stuff that we talked about after the first 2 games of the season. We're seeing Dalton Schultz be more actively involved in this offense. We're seeing, quick throws and things like that, where CJ's barely has the ball in his hands at this point. Like, he's getting out quick, as much as possible. I think the offense, so for Nick Caley specifically, I think he is taking a step forward. Again, it's the Ravens, it's the struggling defense, but like the overall design of everything, like the Jalen Knoll touchdown is a great design.
100%. I think that's what everyone's pointed to. And it was
yeah.
the first time we saw like a misdirection
yes.
over here.
Yes, like, it was great.
Like, wow, whoa, what was that? Like, that 100% was the play we were like, oh, there is some thought process going on versus
yeah.
you go out there and get open.
Well,
that's what it felt like.
It is what it felt like. It felt like there was a plan in this game, mm-hmm. a plan in the fourth quarter of the Titans game. The last 5 quarters of football have been very good for Nick Caley, and we've been pretty hard on him, I think rightfully so. I think questioning if he should be on the hot seat was totally justified. I think it still is justified because, you had to play some good teams before you're off the hot seat. But he is a first-time play caller, and, you know, it wasn't easy for Bobby Slowik right away. You know, it's not always, you know, off the ground and running with coordinators. So I think that's, to me, is of all the things that happen in this game, that's the biggest positive, is he looks more comfortable as a play caller. And so far, D'Amico Ryans no longer calling plays on defense has worked out really well for the defense.
Yeah, and I think that if we were in that building for 5 years or 3 years with D'Amico, we could call plays. I don't mean that to say that any dumbass can do it. I just mean that from the standpoint of Matt Burke has been part of that defense since D'Amico got there. D'Amico knows that well. And Frank Ross has probably got a lot of say in that defense. Like, he's got knowledge in the defense, I should say. Who's ever a defensive coach there, that unit is one. Like, anybody could probably call those plays. And Matt's doing a very good job at it. So just stay there, and whatever D'Amico's doing with the offense, keep that going as well, however much of an impact it is or is not making. But with Nick Caley, to see him have a good scramble, I thought the best drive was the opening drive. So now, like, finally, your opening drive should be the best script and your best drive of the game. Mm-hmm. And it was. And then he was able to adapt and do things throughout the game that they had success. They had an 80% success rate in the red zone. He's doing the things that you want him to do as a good coordinator. Again, always comma with this game is the defense allowed anything and everything to happen. Mm-hmm. That has to be pointed out. There was no pressure. I didn't see a whole lot of stunts that they picked up successfully. I will give the offensive line super big credit, though, because they've given up a lot of pressure against bad teams in the past, like all the time.
Yeah,
they didn't
do
that this week or the week before. So credit where credit is due. But the defense in general did not go out there and try to dictate terms and try to force the Texans to do anything. I mean, it seemed like they were just on their heels of like, oh, God, like, what's about to happen? Oh, God, like, he's going to hit me. He's going to hit me. And the Texans dominated, did what they wanted to do, when they wanted to do, and how they wanted to do it.
Yeah, I don't think it's any of that's really a surprise with honestly, even how they played before. I saw, right before we started recording, I saw you retweet something that it was the Texans have given up the least amount of points per game in the NFL at 12, and the Ravens have given up the most amount of points per game at 35. That defense
35
is,
points per game.
Is atrocious.
They've given up more points in their five games than the 2000 Ravens did all season. Like, bro, that is crazy. Like, this is a historically bad Ravens team. And John Harbaugh should not be on the hot seat. However, he needs to get that building in order. Like, they were unprepared. They've been ill-prepared for previous games. You need to coach through stuff. And there's a lot he's having to coach through. But take the loss, but take it on the chin, like swinging and being in position and fighting. But that's a different conversation. But that's how bad the Ravens are. But we talked about this a couple times, and D'Amico always talks about it, and I agree with it every single time he says it. This game, as every game, is always about the Texans. This game was even more about the Texans, because if the Texans didn't do what they were supposed to do and what they wanted to do, then forget about it.
Yeah.
When it comes to better teams, you've got to start like, it's a little bit more about the opponent too.
For sure. I'd say like they checked all the boxes. Like, I was thinking I rewatched a little bit of the game, and the only like the first half of the game, like when it kind of mattered. And there was only like one play that really stood out to me in a bad way. There was a bad protection issue again, where it was very similar to the Titans game, where there was two guys from the Ravens got in free. Woody Marks was kind of, you could tell he was a little confused on what to do because there was two Ravens players right in front of him.
Yeah.
So like there was another like big pass protection breakdown. That's one play. Like that's all I got. Like that's all I got from this game. Like that was negative. CJ Stroud completed 23 out of 27 passes. Your running game was good. I mean, it wasn't great, but Nick Chubb had a good day. I mean, a lot of it was due to one big run, but there's nothing to complain about. Xavier Hutchinson caught his first two touchdowns. I thought they were wrong on the broadcast when they said that. That he had never caught a touchdown pass before.
So I was like,
really? And I was like, oh yeah, I guess he's never caught one before.
Yeah, and I was thinking of the cat that had a good game against the Bengals 2 years ago. That's now with the Washington.
Conley?
No. Nope. Who's the receiver they traded away in the offseason? Noah Brown.
Oh yeah.
I was thinking because they were kind of interchangeable at that point. Noah's filled in, had some good times, but nonetheless, either way. You think about what's the worst part that happened in that game. I don't even really know where to point.
I don't think there is anything. Like, I think it was pretty much a flawless game, and that's where, even though the Ravens are beat up, to have a flawless football game, it does matter. It does. It is a positive for this team. It doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs and everything's hunky-dory and all that stuff, but for this week, it's you did exactly what you should have done against a team that is that injury depleted, that has struggled that much defensively, even when they're healthy. It's all good things.
And I hate this timing of the bye week in general, but I also love it because the offense has a lot of work to do. The offense has a lot to figure out, and I think this is a good time for. Usually, the bye week is like, all right, who's injured? How can we get healthy going forward? I think for the Texans, it's interesting. It's actually at a better time because they don't have their ducks in a row offensively. They've never had success via the offense against a good team. They are about to go into a very difficult part of their schedule. Mm-hmm. And if they can go to Seattle, win or lose, but look like a competent offensive team, then you can at least start to move forward. Now, you got to start winning like games against good teams. Like, they haven't won a good game on the road since that Bengals game that I just mentioned 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I like the timing of this bye week just to get ready to roll for the teams that are good.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're right, because they're largely healthy. But at least you have like five good quarters of tape, right, and a bunch of bad tape to look at and like compare and contrast of like, okay, this is why everything was going wrong versus these three games in the first three quarters, or really first half of the Titans game, you would say. Why did all of this look so much better, even though there is the injuries? Like, what can you take away from this and feel that much better about?
And the lack of penalties. Like, we've talked about this. I'm trying to figure out how many penalties there were. We talked about the fact they were one of the most penalized team throughout the league. Pre-snap penalties was abysmal. It was tough to watch. That's part why the offense, not to let Nick Caley off the hook, but, like, that's part of the reason why the offense did look so damn bad is because they're always – I mean, they had a second and 33 against the Titans that they managed to get on a 37-yard pass to Nico Collins. So, like, that's now something that they're not having to deal with because they're playing more disciplined. And D'Amico Ryans deserves credit for that. So they had four penalties, 26 yards.
I mean, that's great.
Hell yeah, you have four penalties, 26 yards. You take that every single game.
Yeah, they had four penalties, and the Ravens had three turnovers.
Again, I think part of that, not all of it, but part of it is, as an offensive line, when you're having those pre-snap penalties, like we saw Laremy Tunsil get so many false starts because what he was trying to, it's not because he didn't know the snap count, it's because he was leaning back, and trying to like be as in movement as possible by the time the ball was snapped so that the guy on the outside couldn't beat him. So it's like when you're playing a little bit on your heels. The Ravens didn't force the Texans to do anything
ever
on their heels, so like, they were just so comfortable. And that's what worries me, is that the Texans were just so comfortable. Mm-hmm. That's never happening again. They're never going to have the comfortability and the ease at which they had at success as they did against the Titans and then the Ravens. The fourth quarter against the Titans.
So right now, the Texans, their season is in a little bit of a weird place going into the bye week. So you play... You win two games against, where if you look at draft order right now, I guess it's like two of the top three teams with draft picks right now. I think the Ravens currently have the third pick in the draft, at this moment at least. But then your first three games, you lost by a combined 13 points to teams that currently sit at 11-4 combined. Yeah, yeah. Because the Jaguars beat the Chiefs on Monday Night Football. I don't know. I think it's making me feel a little better about the Texans, to be honest with you, with what we're seeing from the Rams, the Buccaneers, and Jacksonville. And I cannot believe I have to say that because Jacksonville looks good.
And Trevor played a hell of a game.
Yes.
He played really, really well.
I think I feel a little bit better about the Texans. It doesn't mean I think they're going to make the playoffs or anything like that, or that they didn't put themselves in an 0-3 hole that's going to make it impossible to make the playoffs. I still kind of feel that way. But with the way those teams are playing right now, I do feel a little more optimistic about where this Texan season can end up. I have them at 9 wins by the end of the season, which is only a game off of where I originally thought.
10.
I didn't think the AFC South was going to be this good. But I don't feel as bad. There's still frustrations. There's still a lot of bad things that happened. You still have to go out there, and I think it's a great point. You have to beat Seattle on Monday Night Football, and that's a challenging game in Seattle, a 9 o'clock kickoff Central Time. It's a big change for all of that stuff. Where that's gonna be a late night for the Texans,
late night for us.
Yeah, yes it is. But I do feel a little bit better heading about this team overall heading into the bye week because of how the last 2 weeks have looked. And then now looking back at the first three games, I'm like, okay, Jacksonville's not one of the worst teams in the NFL. Currently, they're one of the best teams in the AFC. The Buccaneers have Baker Mayfield is pulling rabbits out of the hat every single week, it seems like, this season. He's got four comeback wins in the final minute and a half of football games. It's unbelievable. And the Rams are awesome. So I do feel a little bit better about the Texans, honestly, heading into the bye week.
How about the fact that the AFC South has potentially three MVP candidates and none of them are on the Texans? Daniel Jones, Jonathan Taylor, and Baker Mayfield. Emeka Buka as well.
Four. Yeah, I mean, it's like the guys that you play this season they're playing really well. It is a challenging start to the schedule. It's not getting any easier.
No.
I mean, you play Seattle, San Francisco, and Denver coming out of the bye week. I think it's that order. Like that is a brutal schedule. Like it is not going to get
any easier. It's a first place schedule is what they have. I want to kind of like attack a couple of those things. So if you look at it in the vision of who they've played and how much they've lost by, like great outcomes in regards to you've only lost by how many points? A combined 14 points. 13 points to teams that are 11-4. Like that's awesome. But you can't like remove the fact of how the offense played. Like the offense was so bad that they win those games by double digits if they was actually competent, which maybe gives you even more hope. So to your other point though, that you feel better going into the bye week, 100%. Like I feel significantly better heading into the bye week, not just because they won, but because how they did it and the fact that the offense just looked competent and had a plan, it had a purpose, it had a reason as to why guys were doing things. It had some thought behind it. It had like a creator behind it. It's like if you saw a blob on the ground, you're like, did someone create that? Like what the hell is that? Versus like a human being, it's like, that's created. There's a purpose. There's a reason behind this. The offense against the Ravens had a purpose and had a creator behind it, and it went out and executed its purpose, and it was nice. Versus the Rams, Jaguars, and Buccaneers game, it was like, yo, like, is anyone doing anything with this blob of mess that is on the table right now? That was the Texans' offense. That is no longer the case. We're starting to see it form into a little bit of a something. So that's where I feel good. I just, you obviously can't get rid of the first three games because the competition was better. You can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. But you at least have some good ingredients to put in this mix and this stew finally.
Yes, for sure. I mean, it's amazing. If you just win one of those three close games, how much differently do we feel
even then? The team could be undefeated.
Yeah. 100%. I mean,
that's what's crazy.
Yeah, it's hard to predict for sure exactly what happens. But like, where is the Texans season heading to the bye week if Dario Gumbawale doesn't fumble? If your defense holds Baker Mayfield in week two, if Nico Collins doesn't fumble against Jacksonville, like where is this team today? And that's why like there is reason for optimism. It's just the hard part is now it's like you play in a division where currently you've got 2-4-1 football teams. It sounds crazy. Like if you would have told me before the season started the Texans are 2-3 going into the bye week, I'm like, okay, that's not good. But the Colts probably stink and so do the Jags. The problem is they're both 4-1.
That was the key. The biggest hurdle to your season was your health and yourself. Mm. It was nothing in the AFC South. Because we knew that they were going to be like down there, and the Texans were going to be playing for 9, 10, 11 wins, while the Colts and Jaguars were going to be trying to figure out how to get maybe somewhere between 6 and 9 wins.
Yeah.
Well, that's no longer the case.
They might be going for 12.
Yeah. You now no longer have to just worry about yourself. Mm-hmm. You're watching Monday Night Football, Jags and Chiefs, and you're like, come on, Chiefs.
Yeah.
Because you need the Chiefs to beat the Jags, and the Jags win. So now you're looking at like that map, that roadmap at the end of the season of what your percentage is of making the playoff. Like, if this team wins and this team loses, then we win, and that'll increase our percentages to get in the playoffs. You're now playing that game pretty early in the season just because the teams you had no idea were going to be good are now very good.
Nick Caserio met with the media.
Yes.
During the bye week. As we record this, you just came from there. What'd you learn?
Joe Mixon is getting better. So that he actually gave an answer on that. He actually gave an answer. Now, granted, the bar of answering questions on Joe Mixon,
slow.
I step on it. It's so low. He said he's getting better, he's improving. He said in the next couple of weeks, we'll have more of a direction of like what's going to happen, whether he's going to play or not. So now in a couple of weeks, not that they're going to ever answer a question with definitive direction, but we might be able to get that. Jimmy Ward, And Cade Stover will play this season. It's a matter of when, but other than that, nothing really.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, I saw those injury updates are positive. Mm-hmm. Like, at least Stover.
It's a healthy football team.
Yeah, I think Stover is the one that I want to see back more than, honestly, Mixon at this point.
Ooh, I disagree.
I want to see...
Give me Joe Mixon.
I want to see Woody Cook a little bit. I want to see...
Do you want to talk about that? The fact that the touches were nowhere near what we thought?
Yeah, okay.
Like, running back one is still Nick Chubb.
It is. And now I got some pushback against this on Monday. But if you do take away Nick Chubb's, like, 27-yard run, they're virtually the same yards per carry. But I thought Nick Chubb looked good in this. Looked good.
That's what I mean. But he had more touches.
Yeah.
Because we said, what, 80, 20, yeah. 70, 30 touches. Yeah. We thought Woody Marks was going to get more.
Yeah.
Especially with the receiving aspect of mm-hmm. his game. Like, none of that happened.
But I think it's because Nick Chubb looked good, and I think Nick Cayley... It's kind of like it's trust hot hand.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that's a good that to me looks like good decision making process.
I agree.
From an offensive coordinator. Now
I just want to point out that we were wrong.
Yeah, we were for sure.
For sure, like but you know, Woody Marks, we are here for y'all, telling you when we're wrong. We're mostly right, but
he can block Woody Marks.
Yeah, like he's good at that stuff.
Dude is he's putting people in body bags like every week. It seems like.
Yeah, he's fun to watch. I think he earns more snaps.
Yeah, I think he does too, and I think eventually throughout the season. It's going to really become clear that Woody Marks is the clear number one running back on this team.
I think.
But the process...
He's definitely the most explosive.
Yes,
player, right?
Yes. Yeah. But I think the process in which, you know, what we saw in the Ravens game, where it's like, okay, Nick Chubb is having more success
let him cook.
In this game. Like, let him go out there and be the main guy. That's what it should be. Like, unless you have Saquon Barkley or... I'd say Derrick Henry, but he kind of stinks right now. So does Saquon Barkley. But like, unless you have, like, one of the top running backs in the NFL... It does make more sense to go with the logic that what looks like the Texans went through this last weekend, which mm-hmm. is just let the better guy that day, he gets the ball.
Yeah, I think that's smart, and that's what they did. I think one thing that Nick Caserio said, Jonathan Alexander asked him, like, why didn't you go after some of the higher-priced guys in the offseason on the offensive line? And he said, well, don't think we didn't just because they're not here. And I think that's a valid, like, answer. And a lot of people get on him. To say that that's like a clown answer or you got fooled or like you got beat out, you make an offer for a contract. That contract, you have a ceiling on that contract because you have other contracts and numbers to work through and, mm-hmm. and divvy out. I don't get on GMs about contracts because I'm not in the world of salary cap. Like Texans cap does that stuff really, really well. Maybe Nick could have been more aggressive or paid more a little bit more to get somebody here, maybe. I just don't know that that's the case. But to think that they're not in conversations with the top tier guys, they're always in conversations. Nick has made that very clear over the years. He's always talking. He's always trying to make a trade, whether it's for CeeDee Johnson or not, because the reports were that he didn't try to make a trade. He's always talking to the guys, and there just wasn't interest out there based on the way he talked about it. It's not like he's like, no, we refuse to trade you. We don't want anything in return. Like I do not think that's the way Nick operates.
Yeah,
at all.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where I think we oftentimes, we don't give general managers the benefit of the doubt in sports. Where it's like, yes, like you, did they have conversations with, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs about Joe Tooney? You know, like, did they, before the Bears made the move? Like, did they? Well, we don't know. Because, like, that stuff doesn't get reported. And, you know, it's not, the GM's not going to also admit that they miss all the time. And there are other factors of, like, you can have the same exact offer out to a center, you and the same team, and they go, it's too hot in Houston.
Yeah,
like I'm gonna go play somewhere else. I'm gonna go play in LA. I'm gonna go play in Florida. Like I'm gonna play near my family. Like, there is like we have to. I think we forget that sometimes. That just because the Texans want a player, it doesn't mean they're guaranteed to get him.
Everyone's opinion is of Nick Caserio, I have not changed my opinion. He is not a perfect general manager, but he is a good general manager. He is a top 10 good general manager. The Texans are better because Nick Caserio is their general manager. Could they be better because somebody else is? Maybe, mm-hmm. because he's not perfect. He's not the best general manager. But of all the information that we know about, the talkings of contracts of interior offensive linemen, 10% of the knowledge we have. They have all of the knowledge and why it worked, why it didn't work. Maybe they got it right, maybe they didn't. But for us to play Monday morning quarterback over interior lineman contract extension and talks in the free agent market in the offseason is almost insane.
Yeah, I'm not, when I criticize Nick Caserio for the offensive line, I don't really look at free agency as the problem. It doesn't fix anything. Look at the teams who have like rebuilt their offensive line through free agency and how it's going this year. It's not going that much better in Minnesota. We've got a lot of injuries. It's not going that much better in Chicago. Like, it's not really going that well for the Houston Texans in terms of the guys they brought in free agency. Cam Robinson's not on this team anymore. So you have a draft pick, which is where, like, that's my frustration with Nick Caserio, is the draft capital that he's invested in the offensive line hasn't worked. And that's where I'm critical of him. And also, at some point, like, if you have a huge disappointing season, someone's head's got to roll, in my opinion,
sure,
this year for the Texans.
There's criticism to be given.
Yeah.
But, like...
But over, like, who they signed at left guard, like, Lakin Tomlinson, like, did anyone think he was going to be good? Come on.
But even if the even then, it's like, why didn't you go out and get this guy? Well, what if they did? What if they made the best offer and they just got told no? Or what if, like, his cousin lives in whatever town? It's just... We deal with 10% of the information on so much of that stuff that happens behind the scenes and want to be hypercritical. Don't lose sight of the fact that the Texans are a significantly better football team because of Nick Caserio. And I'm not carrying
because
there is criticism to be doled out. He's not perfect, but he sure is heck better than, like, the bottom half of the league's GMs.
No, I totally agree. I there is a lot of teams that are so fatally flawed. And I was listening to a podcast recently, and it was Mike Sando from The Athletic was doing Ryan Russillo's podcast. And it almost made me, like, in the moment, like, want to rethink all of everything I've said about Nick Caserio being on the hot seat. Because he pointed out the fact that Jason Light, the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, he's a below 500 general manager.
He was?
He is. He is 7 games below 500 as the general manager of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Which thing.
Because he's been there since 2014.
Exactly.
They were awful until Tom Brady got there. And then it's like, now all of a sudden, like, Jason Light's considered, like, one of the best general managers in football. Well, what happened? What about everything that happened before Tom Brady?
And then your guy in Chicago is considered one of the best ones.
And he stinks.
He's horrible.
He stinks.
It's a media narrative, which is wild.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny. Like, it's not easy. Doesn't mean you shouldn't be good at your job. But, like, there's a lot of things that have to take place. Like, Todd Bowles has turned into a phenomenal coach who followed Bruce Arians. Like, there's a lot of things that have to go your way. And general managers will admit, I'd rather be lucky than good every single day of the week because so much of the good that happens is out of your control, as is the bad. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the Ravens right now. Are they a crap organization? No, they have their top six highest paid guys that are hurt. It doesn't make their GM any worse because they have what? No depth? I mean, how much depth can you possibly have behind your top six guys? Does it make John Harbaugh on the hot seat? No, it's a bad year. It's a moment in time. Look at what they've done and look at what they're going to go. They're going to be just fine in the long term. Like, look what they were willing to do with Lamar Jackson when other teams thought he should be a wide receiver.
Yeah.
That's why Shedeur Sanders is such a dumbass for not wanting to go to Baltimore and be coached by that organization and thought, Cleveland, they've done a good job at developing quarterbacks.
Yeah, like, geez, I think he messed that one up, to say the least.
Yeah, not to mention that press conference in the locker room with a dummy.
It was just strange.
It's childish. It's so immature. It's so stupid. It's not benefiting you anyway. Whether I have a problem with it or not, just from his perspective, is that helping you?
No.
Is that helping you get a job? Do you think there's general managers and owners around the league, but that's the man I want leading my team? Hell no.
No, we'll get back to the Texans here. But
sorry.
No, it's okay. But the Shedeur thing, and some of this is not his fault. It's very Tebow-y.
Well, that was the problem with Tebow, like, is that he was a media circus.
Exactly.
For whatever reason.
Like, Shedeur Sanders is the third string quarterback, and he's miming answers to the media because he's responding to Rex Ryan.
It's immature.
It's immature,
and it's everything that people criticize him for. Yeah. Don't make this day about you. You could have just answered the question and said, super proud of Dylan. Dude's worked his ass off. He deserves it. Like, I'm there for him. That's all.
My last thought on this, I don't blame Shedeur.
You don't blame Shedeur what?
About this situation.
What situation?
The miming situation.
Why?
Because then Daddy Dion is commenting on Instagram, like, you really got him, son. Like, he's like...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, I blame Shedeur because he's responsible for his own actions. But that's another thing. It's like...
It's being encouraged.
Why is Dion allowing...
It's being encouraged by Dion.
Yeah, it's enabling.
Yeah, he's... Like Dion thought...
100%.
Dion thought it was funny. Shedeur's still a kid. He's acting like...
He's hurting... My biggest problem with the Shedeur Sanders stuff has actually nothing to do with Shedeur. It's the people like Ryan Clark or people that don't have anything invested in Shador.
Oh, yeah.
That tell him he is great or that it's a racist move to have Joe Flacco named the starting quarterback, and you're feeding him a bunch of lies, mm-hmm. and you're airing him out to fail versus telling him the truth and trying to build him up to set him up for success. You're trying to play a narrative and a culture game that is failing Shador, and that's the saddest part. These people don't have anything built into him. They don't lose or gain anything with his failure or success, and that's what sucks for Shador. Because I want him to be good, but like he's not acting like a third string quarterback.
Yeah,
he's acting like a diva at Colorado that got his name retired for almost winning the Alamo Bowl.
Yeah,
and you haven't accomplished it. Like, dude, just check yourself, and then go out and be awesome, and like. Do what you're supposed to do. But people are, I get pissed off at the people that are setting him up to fail and look bad for a culture war, and it's sad.
Yeah. Nick Caserio, the deadline was approached a little bit with Nick Caserio. Mm-hmm. He's like the typical Nick Caserio answer, like, oh, well, like, well, you know, we'll look. It doesn't mean anything's going to happen, but like, we'll be talking to people is basically what he said. What do you want to see the Texans do with the deadline this year? Is it, do you want them to kind of stand pat? Are you open to the idea of them being a seller at the deadline? If that in a month the season doesn't really get back on track, like if they go 1-2 against Seattle, you know, San Francisco and Denver, and would you be open to them selling, or do you think it's just kind of a ride at all?
Who would they sell? Like,
So Jeremy and I came up with one name, really.
I was about to say, because they don't have a whole bunch of good old talent. Daniil Hunter.
Yeah.
It's a great get back. You can get a lot back for Daniil.
Yeah, I kind of talked myself into the idea that the Texans, basically no matter what, should trade Daniil Hunter at the trade deadline.
No matter what?
Well, I don't think they're going to be in playoff contention when the deadline gets. Like, they're not going to go 3-0, I don't think, in their next three games. So I don't think they're going to really be in, like, playoff contention. And if someone offers you a second-round pick for Daniil Hunter, I think you have to take it.
Second round?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Now, I have blinders on. Golly. With the deadline because I'm used to GMs that I follow trading second-round picks at the trade deadline. I know most teams don't do that. But if you got a good offer for Daniil Hunter, like, is that something you – what do you think
– what's his contract situation right now?
He's got 1 year left.
So next year is his final year?
Yeah.
What the problem – like, see, I don't know. Like, that's so much of your DNA. And I think this team still can be good.
Because you have to go out and replace them immediately, right?
Yeah, and like you get worse without Daniil significantly because this defense works in tandem with each other. And I said that was the best part about Sunday, actually, was the fact that we got to see this defense be at its best because the offense went out and scored points and did its job. They stayed on the field for long periods of time, kept the defense off the field. The offense scored points. It allowed the defense to pin their ears back, get up to the quarterback, which then allows the secondary to go out and get the interceptions that they had, two by Jalen Petrie, one by Kamari Lassiter. So if you get rid of Daniil Hunter, you actually change the entire DNA via domino effect, which makes me nervous because this team is still good. Whether it's a bad year because of Nick Caley and the offense, I don't think you want to blow it up.
Yeah, I don't know how D'Amico, when we were talking about it on our Monday show, it was last week. I don't know how D'Amico would handle that from a coaching perspective, like being the former player, and even if the season's not going in the direction that you want it to go, seeing guys get moved, that while there might be long term beneficial for you as an organization to move on from players at the deadline. I'm just not sure D'Amico seems one to be like, yeah, let's trade guys at the deadline.
And
feels
why
like
you need
almost
Nick
the
Caserio.
Opposite approach of the way D'Amico Ryans would want to handle it.
And that's why you have a Nick Caserio, because Nick Caserio can make the tough decisions that have to be made for the future of the team while, you know, also kind of being a little bit, competitive in the moment. I want to look up the 49ers seasons over the years because I want... Because if this ends up being a loss of a season, it kind of reminds me of the 49ers over the years where they had injuries and they were really bad, but we all knew they weren't a bad football team. They were just enduring some stuff that did not like really go well. Like if they had 13 wins, 11, 12 wins, then 8, then 5, then 2, 6, 4, then back up to 13, 6, 10, 13, 12. So... like, they had their down year.
Yeah, they had the
bottom. They had, like, that third overall pick.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what I see happening with the Texans right now is The 49ers didn't blow it up that year.
Yeah,
just were like, this sucks. Let's pack it up. But let's also hold on to everybody, and then next year we go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think the Texans, like, my guess is, like, they'll look at the deadline unless they get blown away. Like, they will be a quiet team this year. I mean, the NFL deadline's pretty quiet. It's been a little more active recently.
Like, it can either be, like, boom or bust. Right?
Yeah, like, if the Texans were honestly to make a trade at the deadline this year, like, the player I would honestly expect to get moved would probably be, like, Christian Kirk. Like a player like that, to where, like,
yeah, they have no use for in the future, yeah, but helping team immediately.
Yeah, right, but like let the young guys play, kind of a thing. Like, I don't really expect to see. I mean, hell, even a guy like Nick Chubb, in theory, like, could be an option for a team that's desperate, like the Los Angeles Chargers. If they wanted to make a move at running back now that they've lost their top two guys, like, it's like they're marginal moves. You know, they're probably not much better in return for, like, the Cam Robinson trade you made. Like, you're not getting, like, top draft capital this year from the Texans roster. You're getting minimal impact, if anything.
What week is the trade week, trade deadline?
I think it's November 18th this year, so I think that's after week 9.
Okay, so there's a lot of football to be played between now and then.
Yeah, there's a good amount of trade, like a good amount.
Week 9?
Oh, no, November 4th.
Week 9, though?
Oh, yeah, it's after week 9.
Oh, so that's after the Broncos game, so there's actually not that much. There's only 3 games.
Yeah, it's after week 9.
No, so I think it's way too early. I think it's way too early to be sellers on this team, and I just don't think they have the piece that they want to be trading.
I really wish the deadline was later in the year.
100%.
Because it's like, it's, you know, if...
You kind of know what you are more, especially with the way the NFL works now. And Nick said this today in his press conference, is that you figure out who you are as a team, and we say this all the time, it takes at least a month, at least 4 weeks to figure out who you are as a team, which is why we waited 3 weeks... to really lay into Nick Caley, because there is that figuring out period, because you can't do it all in training camp like you used to do. There is a brand new offense. You don't play the guys enough throughout preseason, which eventually I wonder if that's going to boomerang. Like, do you get back to actually playing guys in preseason games so you don't forfeit the first 3 games of your season?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at right now. Because if the Texans, let's just hypothetically say the Texans took preseason, like, truly seriously, not like trying to win, but starters played half of every game, I'll guarantee you they get at least 1 or 2 extra wins.
Yes.
I mean, that's how close you were. The margins of error are that slim, yet you don't really set yourself up for the best success to start the year.
Yeah, it's one of those,
I understand why.
I understand why as well, because, like, no, the Ravens didn't, like, they're not in the position they're in because of preseason football. Like, their injuries happened after.
I would actually, you're right. But the Ravens take preseason seriously, more seriously than anybody else in the historical, under this regime. They're as good as any team in the NFL.
And I would like to, like, I'm with you. The preseason football stuff, I think it's a lot of the cause of the injuries that we see early in the season, because I think guys are not fully in football shape at this point. And it's also the reason why you see a lot of bad football play. I mean,
horrible.
There are results that happen in week 1 that you look at now and you're like, like, I don't really believe any of what we just saw of, like, anything that happened in week 1. Now, the Texans, I think, has become more realistic because you played a team like the Rams, who are led by Matt Stafford. They're largely the same roster. Like, they don't really need a ton of work versus the Texans, were a new OC. I would have liked to see more, and I do wonder, like, where the Texans season would be today if they would have been more aggressive.
I can't guarantee it, but I guarantee you they have one more win. At minimum, one more win.
I honestly kind of feel you on that.
Because all it takes is one extra drive, and they win 3 games.
I know.
Let alone 1 game.
It's crazy thing, like, we're, like, it's so funny, because, like, the Texans season, it's just this is not how I expected it to go in terms of, like, what's happening in your division. Like, it was not hard to, like, say they're going to be 2-3 going to the bye week. I think this is exactly where I thought the Texans were going to be going to the bye week.
Record-wise, how they
got here is not how I expected.
It's the most confusing 5 games I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, like, the fact that you could have won these 3 games.
You could be 5-0. You're 2-3.
Yes, but then your division's awesome all of a sudden. It's just like, I don't really know what to do with this team, because, like, I'm still not a full believer. I know it sounds crazy recording this the day after the Monday night game. Like, I don't know. Like, how often is Trevor Lawrence going to fall on his ass and he's going to get up and run for a touchdown and win a football game?
Yeah.
Like, once in his life?
I get
it. And it happened on Monday Night Football?
Aren't full believers, and I'm not necessarily a full believer. I'm the guy that can't quit them. Most people can't get on the train with Trevor Lawrence in the city. I thought they were going to be better this year. They are better this year. I didn't think the Colts were going to be like this, but damn.
Even the Colts will. It's like, you know, Daniel Jones has a long history of getting hurt, and if he gets hurt in his next game, and Anthony Richardson has to play the rest of the season, they're not winning the division.
That'd be the biggest gift ever if Anthony Richardson was the quarterback.
So it's like the Texans season's in a weird place, and I do think, you know, based on the good thing is like they control their own destiny still. At this point in the season, like if you were 1-4 at this point going to the bye, if you had lost to Baltimore, your season's cooked.
Everything's still way alive.
Yeah, but you don't play the Indianapolis Colts until Week 13. There's a lot of football that has to happen between now and then. So while I still think at this moment I would not predict the Texans to make the playoffs, I think they're going to fall short. I think it's going to be really close at the end of falling short. But it's not, the season's not over. Like that's the biggest positive to me from this weekend is, doesn't matter how you got it, you got the W. And your season's not dead.
You could be right. They could also get 10, 11 wins.
For sure.
Because if the offense, and I hate playing the because if game because it means you're trying to like make a little bit of a leap that's not really there. And I don't think any of us really believe the offense has, quote, figured it out and is, quote, back because of the competition. But I think we all do agree that it's better than what it was the first 3 weeks of the season.
Agreed.
We don't know how much better. Is it better enough to get wins over the Seahawks, 49ers, and Broncos coming out of the bye week?
Mm-hmm.
Is it? It has to be good enough to get two wins. They have to win two of those three games.
I agree.
And they're at Seattle. They're home against the 49ers and Broncos?
49ers at home. Yes, 49ers and Broncos.
So I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I think the one they really got to get is that Seattle one, man.
I think so, too.
I think it's possible. I don't think Seattle's world beaters.
Coming out of the bye, a team that just gave up 38 points to Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers, whose offense is very good. I think you can get Seattle. And Sam Darnold's still going to Sam Darnold at some point. Like they can win that game because DeMeco, in my opinion. Like I think Sam Darnold's another great story in the NFL of redemption and giving up on a quarterback too early and finally being in the right system. And I think he looks better in
twice
Seattle,
now.
Honestly, than he did in Minnesota.
He's
right
good.
At this point. He's good, but like he's still going to pull a Sam Darnold at some point. So
yeah,
I think you can get the win on that one for sure.
I'm in on that one. And then obviously the 49ers, you just kind of wait to the week of to make a prediction because they have so many injuries and massive injuries every single year. Week to week, so you just don't know what version you're going to get. Like, is it going to be Mac Jones? Is it going to be Brock Purdy? Nick Bosa is now out for the year. Is Christian McCaffrey going to be around? What is Juwan Jennings even going to be around? Is Fred Warner going to be? Mm-hmm. You just have no idea, and that seems like always with that franchise, right?
Yeah,
now.
They are, man. That team, they're very. A lot of people have been dropping like the Ravens or the Astros. I think it's the 49ers or the Astros.
Yeah,
where it's just like that's a team that has been brutally beat up by injuries for years at this point. Ravens are having some bad luck, but the 49ers, it feels like every single year they lose multiple of their best players every single year, just like the Astros do. All right, I'm Joe George. He's Will Kunkel. Will, where can we find you?
Find me on Instagram, TikTok, X, and of course, I got some really great news coming for my show on YouTube, Kicking It With Kunkel. Subscribe there as well. The season's back. Like, the season is no longer really on life support. The season is alive. Like, we're good.
Season's alive.
But the new definition of the Texans will be defined after that Mariners game.
It will.
The whatever game, Seahawks.
We will be back next week. We'll be recording after the game since we normally record on Tuesday. So thank you guys for watching. Remember, hit that subscribe button right here on YouTube. Thanks for listening to ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can catch me from 3 to 6 Monday through Friday with Jeremy and Joe. Thanks to our friends at Blue Star Tequila. We find it near you at BlueStarTequila.com. Have a good one. Peace.